I think one of the problems when people sort of dabble in the whole food plant-based thing, you're still kind of feeding that addiction because there is sort of an addictive element to food. We tend to encourage people to sort of make an aggressive change towards whole food plant-based so that they can really neuro-adapt and start to appreciate the foods. Mm-hmm. I found like my exercise intolerance really improved. And the last few years, I've done a lot of biking, you know, both indoor and outdoor.
This is the Healthy Lifestyle Solutions podcast, and I'm your host, Maya Acosta. If you're willing to go with me, together we can discover how simple lifestyle choices can help improve our quality of life and increase our longevity in a good way. Let's get started.
All right. Welcome back to another episode of the Healthy Lifestyle Solutions podcast. I'm your host, Maya Acosta. Very excited about today's conversation that I'm going to have with this amazing couple that I was telling them, they sort of remind me of when Riz and I first got started with the podcast and the YouTube channel and the work that they're doing to support their community. So I'm very excited to have Dr. Lee Carrusco and his wife Joyce have spent over 50 years combined in healthcare industry. Lee is currently a diagnostic radiologist. Joyce has spent time in the biotech and the pharmaceutical industry, complemented by work in the health in insurance industry, revenue cycle, and most recently, health policy. And together, they can attest to the importance of nutrition in leading a happy, healthy, productive life. Welcome.
Well, thanks for having us. We're glad to be here.
Thanks, Maya.
Yes, I know that you've been very busy. We've been trying to find a time when we're both available, when both of us are available to sort of have this conversation. And as we're coming towards the end of the year, I said, I definitely want both of you to come on the show and talk to us about the work that you do. I listen to your podcast as well. And so let's get started. I'd love to learn, you know, where are you living today? Where are you? And how did you get started in working together with the whole food plant-based lifestyle, educating other people about the benefits?
Well, right now we're actually in, we're living in Orange City, Iowa. And I actually work in Lamar's, Iowa, very small towns. We moved within the last 6 months from Minneapolis, where I've been working for over 20 years as a diagnostic radiologist. And the way this whole thing started was back in 2017, I was driving to work one day, and I was just listening to like a 2 or 3 minute YouTube video with Dr. Michael Greger, whom I'm sure you know of. And he was talking about vitamin B12, and he stated something that I had not known, despite multiple years of medical training and, you know, postgraduate training and, you know, decades working as a doctor, which is a simple fact that vitamin B12 does not come from animals. And that astonished me. It actually comes from bacteria. And back in the old days, you know, when everything wasn't so sterile, you could get enough vitamin B12 just drinking water, you know, untreated water. Not that that's a good idea because, you know, you can get parasites and stuff from untreated water. But I was shocked by that because I always thought the idea of a plant-based diet was really kind of silly, you know, to not eat animal products. But then that opened my eyes, and Dr. Greger really sounded like he knew what he was talking about. So I bought his book, and I just like devoured it, just fascinated by this connection between what we eat and the state and health of our bodies. I mean, I remember I read it, and I read it again. I thought it was so interesting. And then I was looking for more information, so I read Dr. McDougall's starch solution. And I was shocked by this concept that, you know, you can eat a lot of carbohydrates and be healthy. I was very skeptical because I was like, you know, half of Americans, I had a problem with my blood sugar. I was actually in the pre-diabetic range. I had sky-high cholesterol. And I sort of suspended my disbelief and said, okay, I'm going to just try this for a few days and see what happens. But I know my blood sugar is going to go higher and I'm going to start to gain weight. Well, within 3 days, my blood sugar was completely normal. In fact, it wasn't just normal. It was at the bottom of the normal range, which from a health risk perspective is the best place to be. And then, you know, I weighed myself and thought, okay, I got to be up a couple pounds. So I was down a couple pounds. And then I figured, well, I got to keep going with this. I like to exercise a lot. I just found my endurance just skyrocketed. My cholesterol came down. It dropped 187 points. You know, I had some, you know, minor health issues, like a little bit of reflux and a little bit of a rash on my face, called acne rosacea, and it just all disappeared. And I just became hungry for more. And I realized that, you know, as a diagnostic radiologist, really what I was doing was diagnosing people's lifestyle diseases on CAT scans all day. And so I learned more and more about this. And then I was doing it for a few years. And then Joyce, it was only a little more than two years ago, Joyce gives me a cold call. Like, we didn't know each other. But we have a mutual interest on healthcare policy. And I've, you know, written articles on it. And I have a lot of insight because I've worked both in the Canadian healthcare system and in the American healthcare system. And I actually wrote a book, and she was one of the few people a number of years ago that actually read the book. And she was putting, she was doing a podcast with another woman about healthcare policy. And so she wanted to, me to be a guest on her show. So she just called me. It was like 2 years ago, August. She cold calls me, introduces herself, and, you know, says she's doing this podcast. And we just kind of hit it off. And so we call, over the next few months, we had a few other phone conversations. And just every time we just, you know, under the guise of trying to figure out when to do this podcast, but we would just talk and talk. And we had a conversation where we were talking. Actually, I was in an airport. I had gone out of town to work for a day or so. And we were talking, and she was driving, and she had a bad connection. She was in South Carolina at the time. And we were talking about health policy, and the topic came up about personal responsibility for health. And I, you know, I just started to get into this whole thing about the importance of, I had actually done the training program in anti-aging medicine, just as sort of out of interest a number of years ago through the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine. And after what I learned about healthcare, about nutrition, I realized that they were kind of barking up the wrong tree, you know, pushing the paleo diet and a lot of emphasis on supplements and stuff like that. I really, really realized that the cornerstone of being healthy and, you know, promoting the length of your life and quality of your life is actually what you eat, along with other things like good sleep and that sort of thing. And anyways, we just started to talk about that, and the phone call dropped. And, anyways, long story short, we started to, she was in town a few months later, we met, we just hit it off. That's how everything got started. And she was, well, I can tell you, you know, just, I'll let her give her story, but she was sort of interested in, you know, anti-aging and that sort of thing. But it really didn't have an idea about nutrition. And yeah. I said, that's really important thing. So, I told her about the plant-based diet, and, you know, maybe you could tell them what happened then.
Yeah, no. So it was so crazy because I started talking to him about, I have a great interest in anti-aging. I have always wanted to age well. And most importantly, I want to be strong in my older years. So I became a Beachbody fanatic. I had been a longtime runner. And I got to a point where I actually had to have both hips replaced at the age of 47 and 48. And I'll never forget, I went to see this hip preservation doctor. I thought I had a pulled muscle for about a year, and I had a snapping tendon and just a bunch of funky stuff going on. And he said, yeah, you're bone on bone. And it's all that jumping around. I was really into the Shanti. I mean, just crazy workouts. So here I am, you know, 48, hip replacement, no longer running. And I just really started to navigate and experiment. I started dabbling in fasting, and then I jumped on board with the juicing craze, which I still advocate. But after meeting Lee, it really hit me hard. Like, wow, I do not eat well at all. And when he told me I could eat as many potatoes as I wanted, because I love potatoes, I'm like, I'm on board. So I, being such a novice, what do I eat? You know, I made it so simple. I went to Walmart. I bought a ton of oatmeal, pickles, pickled beets, sauerkraut, potatoes, vegetarian beans, and I had a kidney bean salad that I loved. And that's what I lived on. And fruit, you know, I was trying to incorporate a lot of berries. I lean more towards vegetables. I really have to force myself to eat a lot of fruit. And within 2 months, not that I was overweight, but I lost 9 pounds. And I had been working on this one Beachbody workout. I could never do the whole thing. And it's just, bam, wow, I did the whole Beachbody workout. So I, you know, I became a believer. And, you know, I grew up on a dairy farm. I mean, I'm the girl that had meat and potatoes. I mean, whole milk from the bulk tank. The biggest thing for me to give up was dairy. I can give up meat, no big deal. But, you know, we talk about your taste buds go through a change and, and an adaptation.
Yeah.
And now we just, there's no turning back.
Yeah. Yeah. There's, you know, there's definitely an adaptation, the whole thing. You know, at first, when you go on the sort of whole plant foods, it may seem a little bit unpalatable, but then your nervous system sort of resensitizes and readjusts and it starts to taste really good. And I remember, you know, early in my whole process with this thing, I came home from work and I was really hungry and there was just some cold steamed broccoli on the counter. And so I scarfed it down. It's like, wow, this is just amazing. It was so good, like with nothing on it at all. And I'd realized that my taste buds had completely, you know, adapted. And which is true. And I think one of the problems when people sort of dabble in the whole food plant-based thing, you're still kind of feeding that addiction because there is sort of an addictive element to food. We tend to encourage people to sort of make an aggressive change towards whole food plant-based so that they can really neuro-adapt and start to appreciate the foods. I found like my exercise intolerance really improved. And the last few years, I've done a lot of biking, you know, both indoor and outdoor. And it was November in Minnesota. And I was curious to see if I could ride my bike 100 miles. So, you know, I didn't want to do it outdoors in November in Minnesota. So I have this online program that I use. It's very realistic. So one day, a couple of years ago in November, I got up and started biking at 7 a.m. I didn't know if I could even ride 100 miles. I didn't know if it would take me to midnight or what. But in 6 hours and 15 minutes, and I had never done a ride anywhere near that long, but in 6 hours and 15 minutes, I went 102 miles. You know, with quite a bit of elevation as well, you know, going up hills. And I attribute that entirely to the plant-based diet. And plus, you know, I was in, like, I was about 62 at the time. And that's completely because of the plant-based diet. There's no way I could have done that otherwise. So, you know, we're both like big believers. And, I really believe that a major shortcoming of the healthcare system is that we just don't address this with people.
Right.
Disease after disease after disease, common diseases that I see on CAT scans sort of all day, every day, you know, diverticulosis, diverticulitis, fatty liver, gallstones, you know, cancers. These things are all tied in with nutrition. And yet, you know, I sort of felt this calling that I want to do something to try to educate people because the mainstream medical system just won't address this. I mean, I think there's a slow incremental growth. Like, I think your husband's doing some work in that regard. But this is what really motivates us to try to educate people to embrace a whole food plant-based diet. And they really have no clue that amazing transformations that they may experience. You know, like I used to start thinking, well, nutrition, yeah, it's kind of sort of important. No, it's like really important. It determines whether or not you're going to be a healthy person or unhealthy person. So that's what really motivates us.
Well, it takes a lot of courage, I must say. I remember when my husband first got started in trying to spread the word at the hospitals where he works and his colleagues, there was a lot of resistance. And he's at the point now where he's comfortable with his beliefs and no longer is apologetic about it. But he did say that there was a moment when people would call him the crazy doctor. But he's been able to create some change, especially in the hospital food, to provide healthier options. And even in the doctor's lounge, they always have, because they have to take into consideration other people's religious beliefs as well. So some people don't consume pork or whatever it may be. But it was like, well, what about the rest of us that don't consume any animal product whatsoever? It would have been fun to have him along in this conversation because there's so much that all four of us, I think, could speak about. So going back to Joyce, because I only know a little bit about Beachbody. I wasn't into all that hardcore cardio work, but my husband was. He was into Tony Horton. So the whole P90X. And we you know, so this is life before I came into the picture. He was very much into all of that. And as a result of the running and the aggressive workouts, he really has damaged his knees so much he's got a lot of problems and won't do any surgeries right now. But it's has really taken away from the quality of life that he could have from because of the intense workouts that he used to do back then. But during the pandemic, one of his daughters came home from college, he was like, "We're going to do P90X." So there we were, all three of us in our small apartment. And I was like, you did this before? This is so brutal. Like, this is not sustainable whatsoever. But it's fun too, because I was like, I never knew I could feel so good working out. But I'm curious, Joyce, now that you know, because it sounds like there was a lot of cardio work, back then, did you know the importance of strength building as we age? Was that something you knew about?
Yeah. So I dabbled in strength training many, many years ago. And then I really started focusing on running. I have run a marathon and a half marathon. But it wasn't really till I met Lee. He used to be a bodybuilder and considered going professional.
I was kind of on a path to become a professional bodybuilder. I'd won some competitions and then decided, you know, as I got further into my medical education, I just didn't have time. I mean, I kept working out, but I didn't have time to pursue it competitively. And actually being a doctor was actually way more important to me. So I kind of let that drop, but I've always worked out since. And
has put together a weight training program for me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I'm nudging him in the direction of putting together a podcast just on fitness topics. Yeah. He knows, he is so, well-read on the topic. And you know, I'm 57. I have to be really careful about technique. Mm-hmm. And so he's my coach. Mm-hmm. There are certain things I will not do. I've had so many surgeries on my body. I'm literally pinned together. I was in a traumatic farm accident when I was 18. Yeah. I almost lost my arm. Mm-hmm. I've had the hips done. I have a, what's the deal with my left hip? That it's always going out of joint.
The sacroiliac joint.
I have a really loose SI joint, so I get SI issues. So yeah, we have a gym downstairs, and I absolutely love strength training. It's really my core focus now. I mean, we bike when we can. I walk my dog an hour a day, but it's really the strength training that I'm focusing on right now.
And the program I put together for her, it takes about half an hour. We do it 3 times a week, and you can make a tremendous amount of progress on that. You know, she's been getting stronger and stronger. You know, the technique part is really, really important. Like, for example, the other day she was about to do a deadlift and I stopped her. Like, she had, her head was down, her spine was curved. I said, stop. You know, the little nuances are actually really, really important for making the exercise productive and safe. And it's really helpful to have a knowledgeable coach with an eye on you to make sure you're doing things correctly. I mean, because it is possible to hurt yourself with weights. There's no question.
I find that in this field, when it comes to fitness and that nutrition component, there are very few people trained in both that can adequately help the individual. So on the podcast, I've only had 2, maybe 3 people who are great that I've considered even hiring as fitness coaches or trainers so that I can also build muscle while I'm eating healthy. And so, but it is interesting that a lot of us don't have that. And that's one of the complaints that you hear a lot is, you know, we prescribe this way of eating, this lifestyle, but then you have to worry about everyone else around you and who can teach you how to work out and build muscle, especially as we're aging.
The fact that he is a diagnostic radiologist, he really has a very unique perspective. He's always mentioning, you know, different bones and even just, you know, some of the simple exercises that I do, you know, he'll make one minor adjustment because we're always focused on technique. Mm-hmm. Your goals when you weight train should change as you get older. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm never going to be an Olympic weightlifter. My objective now is I want to make sure 20 years down the road, when I'm getting on an airline, I can lift my bag and put it overhead in the overhead compartment. Mm-hmm. You know, and I want to have a very strong back. So yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, we could talk endlessly about physical fitness.
The thing about strength training is that, you know, particularly as you're getting older, is the thing that's going to disable you is your inability to like rise up out of a chair, you know, and pick up your bag of groceries or whatever. It's really not going to be your inability to run a marathon. And although, you know, I think it's very important to do aerobic exercise. It's also really, really important to have, you know, strength in your workout too. You know, one of the interesting thing about, you know, doing the plant-based thing was, I remember a number of years ago, this was a long time ago, I clicked on a lecture by Dr. McDougall, and he was going on, oh yeah, you know, you can eat all these potatoes and blah, blah, blah. You don't need meat. I just thought he was a crazy man because, you know, I had been in this culture of bodybuilding where you're eating animal products six times a day, you know, because you need all that protein, supposedly. But I've since been educated that it's very easy to get adequate protein on a plant-based diet. You know, you maybe get a little bit less than people that eat meat, but we're still probably getting twice what we need.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know, because the way the recommended daily intake is set up by the U.S. government is they've established a mean requirement, an average, and then they put a buffer that covers, you know, two full standard deviations above the mean. So 98% of people are covered by the recommended daily intake of the U.S. government, which most people would consider very low. It's, you know, for men, it's either 56 or 58 grams per day. And for women, 46 or 48, I forget. It's very much, much lower than people think they need. But that covers 98% of the population. Everybody, almost everybody's getting almost twice as much as what you need. Without even thinking. And that's true even on a vegan diet. Maybe you get a little bit less, but not much. And then you throw in some exercise, so you're burning more calories, so you're just automatically going to eat more food. So, you know, even if you're trying to build muscle, you don't even have to give it a thought. You're going to get enough protein without any kind of supplements or anything. And I, you know, a number of years ago, I would have been totally skeptical, but I've realized now it's completely true.
And you know what's so interesting? What's the nutritional PhD guy we love? We just love him.
Christopher Gardner from Stanford.
It's like, hey, where do you store protein?
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. You don't store protein. Your excess protein consumption gets turned into fat and carbs.
So tell me more about, I've never heard of him, Christopher Gardner?
Christopher Gardner, he's a PhD. You know, like he's like a research scientist. And he's got a number of interviews on YouTube. I think he's got a book coming out. Actually, we actually approached him about doing a podcast ourselves with him, but I think he's too busy with his book right now. But he's very interesting to talk to. You know, knows all the state of the art research, and you know, he takes a very sort of scientific view of things. But he himself is a vegan for moral, ethical reasons, and also knowing that, you know, you can get all the nutrients you need from a plant-based diet. You know, certainly at the bare minimum, you need to take vitamin B12 because on a vegan diet, you know, unless you're eating supplemented foods, you're not going to get enough. So we take three times a week, we take like I believe it's 5,000 milligrams. It's from Costco, and like one bottle will last you 2 years or whatever for $15. There's a few other supplements to consider. I've gone back and forth with the omega-3 fatty acids. Where I've landed right now is I think it's probably a good idea to supplement with omega-3 fatty acids. And rather than taking the fish oil, we take the algae-based omega-3s. And the advantage of that is, well, you don't have to kill a fish, but also you're not getting the heavy metals and organic pollutants that you get from eating fish. I mean, fish is, it's funny. I just had a conversation with this about this today with somebody. Fish is not really a health food. You know, it does have omega-3 fatty acids, which are good. There's a lot of saturated fat. You're getting organic pollutants. You're getting heavy metals, and you're even getting microplastics. And also, there's, you know, it's one of the worst foods for producing trimethylamine. which is a sort of a recently discovered cardiovascular risk factor. So, fish is not a good idea. But I think from a brain health point of view, actually pretty much, I think your husband would probably agree from a cardiovascular point of view, I think the omega-3 fatty acids have not been borne out to necessarily be protective. But the thought now that supplemental omega-3 fatty acids are a good idea for brain health, like especially if you're not eating fish, which we're not eating fish. And so there's evidence that the opposite ends of the life spectrum that, you know, omega-3 fatty acid adequacy is really, really important early in life for brain development. And it's important later in life for protecting cognition. But the thinking is that we probably should be taking it in midlife as well, because, you know, our brain has redundancy. And it's sort of like if you have something supported on a number of pillars, well, you could be knocking out pillars and you may not realize there's a problem until the last few are knocked out. The analogy being that, you know, our brain may be undermined by inadequate vitamin B12, and we don't actually really realize it till we get older. So, you know, it may be important in prevention of dementia. And then take vitamin D. You know, we've lived at sort of high latitudes. We've started taking again in September. We didn't take it through the summer because we were out a fair bit. So we're taking 2,000 IUs every day. It's important not to go to excess on anything. You want to, you know, sort of stay physiological. The vitamin B12 value that I mentioned is on the high side, but your body only absorbs a little bit. So it's safe. And then the fatty acids, the vitamin D, the algae-based fish oil, and actually we've just recently added in zinc on the encouragement of Dr. Furman, who we had a podcast with a couple of weeks ago, and we'll be posting soon. He's really quite adamant that it's a good idea to supplement with zinc because the bioavailability in plant foods is not quite as good as is in animal foods. So we started taking a little bit of zinc too. Oh, yeah, and the other thing is iodine. And the rationale for iodine is that people tend to get a lot of iodine from dairy because when the cows are milked, they put iodine on the teats. Joyce would know that.
Is actually true.
And it as he gets into the milk, being in Central North America, which has been called the goiter belt, it used to be that people would get these big thyroid masses, overgrowth of the thyroid gland, because their thyroid's struggling to extract enough iodine from their bloodstream because they're not getting enough in their food because the soil is depleted in Central North America. So when they started adding iodine to table salt, that problem actually went away. But, you know, part of the whole healthy eating thing is to avoid excess salt. So we don't salt our food much. So we include a source of iodine, which is three times a week. We take a small little capsule of kelp. And that's our nutritional supplementation program. And I think we've got all the bases covered there.
Yeah.
Easy to get with too many supplements.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Believe me. Before I knew about the power of nutrition, I was a supplement-holic. I was the individual supplementing with everything. And now I know a little bit better. So I pulled up your website because you have so many resources, Carrisco and Company. You have your coaching program, you do corporate wellness, aspirational aging. I believe, Joyce, you were talking about starting a podcast in that field, talking about aging. I'd love to know more about what can be found. You have a blog and then you have the podcast, which is goes by your name, Carrisco and Company. Tell us more about how you work. Well, let's start with the coaching, how you work with people. Is it both of you together? And then you also have a membership program.
Mm-hmm. So we are newly minted. So we actually, at this point in time, are providing a lot of free advice. Mm-hmm. We are coaching a couple of people, actually a Canadian individual, mm-hmm. and the weight is just flying off of him. And he recently reported back to us that he had a cheat weekend. Mm-hmm. I think it was the Canadian Thanksgiving holiday.
Yeah, yeah.
And he texted us and he's like, oh my God, my joints are killing me. So he's jumped back onto the program. Yeah, I have partnered with WellSteps and we're trying to expand our corporate wellness program. That's been put on hold because I'm focusing a lot of my time right now on finishing up my pilot's license. But yeah, we do offer one-on-one coaching. I do have a certification in coaching and I took the nutrition course from T. Colin Campbell. Mm-hmm. Lee is available for coaching. If he does coach, he does not do that under the auspices of his medical license. Mm-hmm. So we want to stay clear of, but we're also trying to partner with Love.Life Telehealth. Mm-hmm. We have ran into people that have reached out to us. They get all excited. They're overweight. They've got, you know, a multitude of different issues, everything from high blood pressure to cardiovascular concerns. And they get all excited and they go talk to their family practice doc. Mm-hmm. In a couple of cases, I have patients. Oh no, you got to stay away from fruit. And yep. I mean, I'm just so that's why we want to be able to say, no, we'll help you, motivate you, but we really encourage you to reach out to Love.Life Telehealth mm-hmm. and talk to a physician that is whole food plant-based. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So actually, in a couple of weeks, we are going to be interviewing Dr. Susan Bazzoni. Mm-hmm. And we recently interviewed their CEO. And then Kiri O'Connor is also a physician there. We recently interviewed her patient. Mm-hmm. But I guess in a nutshell, I mean, I've got a lot of pots on the stove mm-hmm. simmering right now. I really hope that things are going to take off in 2024. Lee is working on a book. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think I shared earlier with you, we're very interested in doing a documentary on cancer. Just, I mean, Lee and I together share notes, and I've been so deep in the industry, mm-hmm. both from a biotech perspective, pharmaceuticals, genetic testing, revenue cycle. So at one point in my career, I was doing a lot of patient advocacy. And of course, I had a lot of cancer patients reaching out to me and my at the time he, is a partner. I had a company called Genesis Medical Consulting and I partnered with an ERISA attorney and we would go after the insurance company regarding denied claims. And ultimately what Lee and I want to do is empower patients. Mm-hmm. Not only just little things they need to know about insurance when you're newly diagnosed with cancer, what happens to your biopsy? What about all this genetic testing? But most importantly, and unfortunately, so many of these new targeted therapies are not worth, you know, $100,000 a month. Yes, we've made advances in treating melanoma, and Gleevec, for example, is a miracle drug. But there are far too many medications that are bankrupting people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think the industry has gotten incredibly sloppy in terms of how they design their clinical trials. Mm-hmm. Everything's pushed through under expedited review. I'm very uncomfortable with the FDA's relationship with the industry. Mm-hmm. In the midst of all that, you've been diagnosed with cancer. Now what? Mm-hmm. So I really hope to educate people. But you know what? If you want to be empowered, remember you have agency. Mm-hmm. The best thing you can do with a cancer diagnosis is change your diet mm-hmm. and do it quick.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a study out about how women that eat more, just 5 servings of fruits and vegetables, which is not much, reduce their risk of having metastases, you know, when they have breast cancer by 50%. I mean, that's incredible. The average doctor's not going to even tell their patients that, but if it was a medication that did that, yeah. you know, that every breast cancer patient would be on that medication. And of course, fruits and vegetables have no side effects. Like Joyce, one thing, just to expand a little bit on one thing Joyce was talking about, you know, with the clinical trials, one of the limitations of clinical trials is they'll have radiologists look at their CAT scans and we can document, you know, that the tumor has shrunk or whatever. And it's important to do so. But, you know, that doesn't necessarily translate into improved survival in some cases, you mm-hmm. know, depending on the tumor. Mm-hmm. So there are some aspects of cancer treatment that are, you know, worth exploring. And, you know, we're talking to these film producers about potentially having a project along that lines. But just briefly about the book project that I'm working on right now, it's written from the perspective of a diagnostic radiologist that's now educated in plant-based nutrition. And I plan to go through like common diseases like, you know, heart disease and cancer and diabetes, and talk about them and their relationship to food, and actually have a lot of images from CAT scans and ultrasounds and x-rays and that sort of thing, showing the physical manifestations of these various diseases, which I think really makes it super interesting. Yes. But to make it very real for people, that, you know, that what you eat is having a real anatomical, visible, tangible effect upon your body. So, I mean, we haven't quite figured out what the title's going to be, but anyways, we're excited about it.
You know, I'm sure you probably have many conversations with your husband. It's so fascinating to me. He'll come home, he'll just be like exasperated or irritated, perhaps is the right word. And he'll say, you know, wow, this week I saw fatty liver on a 12-year-old. Mm-hmm. And if you really think about that, that's horrifying. Mm-hmm. I mean, was it the CDC, some big government body just released statistics. I think the obesity now is like 80 something, it's just 88 or 80% of Americans are obese.
It's slightly under 80%. Something like 79.6% of Americans are now overweight or obese.
Yeah.
Those are more recent statistics. Now, we had our conversation with Dr. Furman a couple of weeks ago, and he points out that the standards, you know, the definition of what is overweight in the U.S. is too lax. With the body mass index of 25, he thinks it should be 23. And the best longevity occurs in males with a BMI of 22 or less, and females with 21 or less. But he says the percentage of people in the United States that actually have an optimal BMI, like not just in the below 25, but, you know, below 23, is only 2.8% of the population that have it based on a reasonable eating and in exercise. There's about 10 or 11% of people fall into that range, but most of them are in that range because they're sick. You know, they have, you know, like a recognized or unrecognized chronic illness like cancer. And then it's only a small number of people in that truly ideal range that actually have it through healthy living. Now, full disclosure, my BMI is about 26 or 27, which is in the overweight range. But my last time I had my body fat checked, it was under 10%. So it's just, you know, I've lifted weights and stuff all my life. But it just shows that the extent of the problem is actually far greater than people really realize. But we're excited because in this new hospital I'm working at, there's actually a few physicians that are interested in the plant-based thing. So we're going to have a program, an educational program through the hospital that we're working on, and we're going to have soon.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm writing this down because it's fascinating. The projects that you're working on, your film, your documentary, definitely will be something that will be interesting. I haven't seen one in the plant-based lifestyle medicine world that we live in where they're specifically talking about cancer or even have cancer survivors who have adopted this way of living and are thriving, right? Cancer thrivers. And I like what you were saying, Joyce, in terms of understanding that all the treatments are not necessarily the best. I believe both of you are talking about that. And also your book. One of the things that drives me, just similar to what the situation that you both are in, is that I hear on a daily basis, the misery that patients are enduring as a result of lifestyle choices. And the fact that people even today continue to smoke, that one just shocks me after everything that we've known about how harmful and damaging smoking is, that the majority of my husband's patients continue to smoke, despite the fact that they'll lose a leg, they've had strokes, heart disease. So all of that, the majority of what he treats, very similar to what you see, Lee, is related to lifestyle choices. And it really is a thing. It's a driving force for myself because I live it every day. Like I see it, I hear it, to be sort of like a patient advocate as well. It's sort of help to put information into the average person's hands so that they can understand that we are not at the mercy of a diagnosis, that there are things that we can actually do to prevent disease and to, you know, reverse disease if possible. So it sounds like what you two are working on is, you know, very exciting. I look forward to seeing more. And so tell us about the podcast, because I think your second episode, you had Dr. Neil Barnard on your show. And now it looks like you're starting a second podcast. Is that Joyce, the one that would be running that one?
Yeah. So I think we're going to keep everything housed under Crisco and Company. If you go to our website and click on the podcast, I am pushing some of the podcasts that have been done related to healthcare policy. An actuary and I recently interviewed the CEO and founder of Sesame Health. I have not yet posted that. But yeah, I'm going to start pushing out more content related to aspirational aging. Mm-hmm. I'm actually going to be interviewing Lee's partner. Mm-hmm. And he is the most interesting person. I've known him for 20 years. He's the whole reason we're in Iowa.
Yeah.
So we bought a house. We got married, bought a house in, west of the cities in Minneapolis. And, his name is Steve Salisbury, Dr. Salisbury. He called me up one day and he goes, you know what? I'm going to hire your husband and you're moving to Iowa. And I said, no, we just bought a home. Anyway, long story short, here we are. But I got to know him. I've known him for 20 years and he's going to be the perfect candidate for my aspirational aging. In addition to being a diagnostic radiologist, he is a paleontologist. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he actually... brother is a veterinarian, and him and a good friend and his brother found a very rare articulate skull that's on display at the Children's Museum in Indianapolis. The skull is absolutely beautiful. It's a unique, I think, species or genus of the Pachycephalosaurus. But what's so cool is he got J.K. Rowling granted them permission to name it Hogwartsia.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Lee was at his house recently, and I mean, you want to talk about beautiful fossils. Yeah. So he's just, you know, aspirational aging. The point is this, just because we turn 50, it doesn't necessarily mean we have to hang up our hat and sort of become mental couch potatoes.
Right.
It's really important that we turn the chapter and continue to learn and be curious and let go of regret and guilt and shame and forgive. And I mean, all of that stuff, we really have an opportunity. I mean, these can be the most fun years. Mm-hmm. You know, and I look at my life and just a lot of the things that I have overcome. And now that I've changed my way of eating, you know, really the whole food plant-based approach is truly a lifestyle. Mm-hmm. It's not just about the food. I mean, we advocate it as a lifestyle. I'm sure you feel the same way, Maya.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So, please go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, just getting back to the smoking thing, you know, the interesting thing with sort of nutrition from the perspective of the healthcare system is it took something like 7,000 studies to show that smoking was bad for us before the Surgeon General said, you know, smoking's not a good idea. And back in the 1940s, there were actually ads featuring doctors promoting different brands of cigarettes. And, you know, this is a very contrarian thing to say, but this is where the healthcare system is actually with food. Because, well, it's just as an example, I remember a year or two ago, the hospital had a thing where they brought in this donut truck and they were giving all of the employees like fresh donuts. And I was in a little bit of a bad mood. I'd been up a good part of the night on call.
This is not his current hospital works at.
That's right.
That hospital. Wouldn't have happened.
But anyways, they were saying, all the employees get free donuts. And I was a little bit disinhibited because I was tired because I'd been working through part of the night. And And I said, well, what is this place? This is a hospital. We shouldn't be serving people food that makes them sick, which is completely true. I mean, you know, there's like ice cream social, somebody retires or somebody's birthday or whatever. You know, the hospital serves ice cream or pizza or whatever. These are foods that are well-established, will make people sick. And so we're really, when it comes to nutrition, we're exactly where the healthcare profession was with smoking in the 1940s. I mean, we really should be leading the way for people rather than encouraging their bad habits. So anyways, I mean, maybe that's just my neurosis, but that's the way I look at it. I suspect your husband would have the same view.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's very frustrating to be in this, to live in this world, in this reality, knowing what we know. I know that. So yes, my husband's daughter just got accepted into medical school. We went over to Arkansas. So she's in an osteopathic school. And so the night before the white coat ceremony, they had like a picnic for the family right there near the medical school. And so we knew, we always plan. I said to my husband, I'm mainly the planner. We will probably not be able to eat anything at this picnic. Who knows what? We didn't know what to expect. But we were traveling in our camper van, so I carry food all the time. And sure enough, fried chicken. Trucks, fried chicken in front of the medical school. I mean, I just was like, is it not? Am I the only one? It's so obvious. What is going on? I can't believe this. And then the next day, they have the white coat ceremony, and we all come out afterwards to congratulate the medical students. And what are they offering along with refreshments? Cookies. So that's all there was, cookies and some sort of fruity drink. And so it's just this disconnect. And I find it interesting, though, because we've been planting this seed for quite a while, for a few years, in his daughter's mind about the power of food. And, you know, I feel like I often say that in front of her, that you'll never learn anything in medical school when it comes to nutrition. Someone's got to plant that seed in your mind. You have to learn it somewhere else. But I try not to get too caught up in the frustration of it all, because especially because I do have a lot of physicians that come on the podcast. My goal is for us, and I'm only saying it to my listeners, not specifically to you, but my goal is always to be gentle with our physicians, even if they are not on board, because they're more likely to be open to a conversation than if we go in with an attitude. But I have been the patient that walks in with a book or so. I try to be informed so that I can speak with my physician about whatever concern I may have. And so, yes, I'm that person that's reading books all the time. But this is why I appreciate that we have podcasts like the ones that you also have, so that you can also educate people. This is great. Yeah.
There was just an interesting anecdote along those lines. A few years ago, I was at a big gala fundraiser for the hospital that I was working at the time. And the keynote speaker was this young man who he was only like his late 30s, early 40s or something. And he was coming home from a hockey practice. He was in, you know, for guys. And he was coming home and he started to get chest pain. And he realized, it got worse and worse and worse. And so just as he was driving into the hospital parking lot, he passed out and drove the car into the wall of the hospital. So anyways, the hospital team, you know, got him to the ER, and they resuscitate him. And long story short, he had a big, big, big heart attack. And ended up getting a stent and so on. And so this was about a year later. I mean, he would have died definitely without their intervention. So he was going on, you know, talking this very poignant story about how our hospital had saved him. But the irony that I think was lost upon the 600 or 700 people at this gala was that the main course dinner that they were serving was filet mignon, an established cause of heart disease. And I mean, I had pre-ordered a vegan dinner, which was pretty good. But I mean, the irony, I think, is just lost on people.
Oh, by cigarettes and a bunch of alcohol.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing? But even alcohol is so normalized, even in plant-based vegan worlds as well. So I'm starting to have those conversations about alcohol as well. And other support groups, I bring on coaches, like sobriety coaches, that talk about that as well, because it's so, even, you know, anyway, I don't want to get too much into that, but I feel that questioning whether we need to have a glass of wine at all is a good thing to question, because I too was confused with the misinformation. And I'm curious, Lee, what you think. Is one glass of wine okay? Is it good for the heart? one glass of wine a day?
Well, no, actually. I mean, that whole thing has sort of been debunked. There is no cardiovascular protective value. And even a small amount of alcohol increases your risk for cancer. I drink very, very infrequently. Like maybe once every 3 months, I might have a glass of wine or something like that.
He has half a glass.
Yeah.
The Canadian government has come out basically, you know, stating alcohol is a carcinogen.
It is. Yeah.
I used to drink quite heavily. I do not drink anymore. And I will tell you, there are millions of Americans suffering from alcohol abuse disorder. And what's so frustrating, I recall back in high school health class, I was scared to death of like marijuana and hardcore drugs. No one ever told me that alcohol is one of the most addictive substances on the planet Earth. And so, you know, I just have great compassion for people that have and are suffering from alcohol abuse disorder. I personally, you know, if people ask me, I'm not ashamed to say that, you know, I have struggled in this area. I don't drink anymore. And I've had success with a drug called naltrexone. Which I would encourage anybody that's concerned about their drinking, they just want to quit. It's an opioid blocker. People have probably heard of the Sinclair method. But there's a website called Or Health, I believe. You can get the product. And they advocate taking the medication early in the morning. And when I was taking it, there was literally no side effects. And basically, yeah, your brain goes through a process of extinction. Alcohol addiction is just like any addiction. It's like smoking addiction, food addiction. And it's important that if people need the assistance of a drug that's going to start to help break away those neuron reward pathways so that you can replace them with healthy habits, then why not? There's also a lady, This Naked Mind. There's a huge community of people, and she's done so much research in the area of alcohol abuse disorder. So people today, there's so much new research around alcohol addiction. People truly do have resources above and beyond a traditional 12-step program. Yeah, I mean, I just feel so fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, you get the alcohol out of the system. You know, you think, oh, it's going to help me sleep. No, it doesn't. It makes you anxious. You wake up in the middle of the night. It's just, it's so god-awful. I don't know.
Well, the thing is with the naltrexone, my understanding is what it does, it sort of removes the pleasurable sensation that you get from drinking the alcohol. So then if you take it consistently for a long enough period of time, like even if you drink, you lose that reward. And so then you can sort of disconnect yourself from it, and it breaks addiction. It's pretty amazing, really.
That's incredible. Yeah. Well, I made that decision the more that I learned through lifestyle medicine and everything that we're learning with these pillars. I made that decision that I'm done. My heavier drinking days were in my 40s, maybe even earlier in my 30s. I definitely party too much. And so lots of regrets about that, because you just never know how that could have affected aging, right? Like people that never touch alcohol seem to age a little bit better. But here we are today, and we know that the body can heal and works hard in healing itself. So I definitely have a lot more clarity. There was always that inner struggle of, should I even be drinking? You know, that thing that you have is part of that, I guess, addiction or relying on the substance to get through some difficult times or whatever it may be. But I definitely wish I had made that choice sooner. And so I am familiar with The Naked Mind. I read a lot of those books before I made the decision. I just just binged, you know, I took it all in and I got it. You know, this is how society is. This is how women are targeted to drink alcohol. And it's just so easy. It's so easily marketed towards us everywhere we go. It's an event paired with alcohol. Almost in everywhere you go nowadays. And so the mind associates experiences with alcohol.
Yes. And what's really frustrating is this whole, they're targeting mothers, mommy's wine hour.
The mommy juice or something like that.
Yeah, it really makes my blood boil.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I mean, I know so many people too that, you know, necessarily don't have an issue with alcohol, but they've just made the decision, you know, I don't need it. Yeah. It's really not mm-hmm. good for you.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, and really something's wrong if you can't enjoy a social experience without alcohol, you know, actually one of the things we did a couple of years ago, we went to one of Rip Elselstyn's retreats and, you know, I'm sure you're familiar with him, but, you know, it was about a 4 or 5 day thing. It was all plant-based. And I mean, it was excellent. It was an excellent experience. But there was no alcohol. And, you know, people had fun. It was a good time. And, you know, he made the point, like, we didn't really need alcohol to have a good time. It was just a great, you know, group social experience. So I think if a person, you know, really feels they need alcohol to enjoy a social experience, then I think they need to sort of look at themselves as to why that's true.
You know, the other thing too, I do want to just say, if anybody is listening to this, Maya, and they are struggling with alcohol abuse disorder and they're filled with shame and regret, you know, someone told me this many, many years ago. She said, Joyce, you know, this issue, it's not your fault. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what? What do you mean it's not my fault? Yes, it's my, I can't control my drinking. Oh. And she said, no. And if you really think about it, I mean, my gosh, our society pushes alcohol. And there's going to be a certain amount of people. I mean, if you are going to consume an addictive substance, why are we shocked when people get addicted to it? Mm-hmm. I mean, really? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I remember years ago just thinking, you know, oh man, those people can't handle their booze, you know, and it's put all that old crappy thinking away and grab a hold of this naked mind, check out, you know, perhaps a prescription for naltrexone. Mm-hmm. There's the support out there and you can forgive yourself and you can live a very happy, sober life. You don't need alcohol in your system. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And by the way, Joyce, I am curious, you are almost done with your training to become a pilot. Tell us more about that. And do you have your own personal, like, small aircraft there that you'll be flying?
Well,
yeah.
So
funny you should ask.
Yeah. I grew up in aviation. My father, I mean, I remember being in a Cessna when I was like 5 years old. And the thing that's so funny, I used to rock all the time when I was a little kid. And my dad said one time we were flying, I think up to Foston, Minnesota in his 172. And he was listening to the engine. It was going, and he looked in the back and here I am pushing off with my legs, you know? Anyway, so I grew up. I have a brother that is a phenomenal pilot. He's the head priest at the Newman Center up in Fargo, North Dakota, and he's instrument rated. He's flying jets now. And then I have another brother that flew for many years. He does not, I think, currently have his pilot's license, but it's been in the blood. And I started my lessons 20 years ago. And what happened is all of my instructors were getting hired off by the industry. So I went through 3 different planes, 3 different instructors. I was going to even learn how to get my license in a super decathlon. I had experience in a Citabria, Beechcraft, Cessna, Cherokee. I finally just quit. I'm like, this is ridiculous. I mean, and then I started having babies and life got in the way and now I'm just finishing it up. I just literally came from the airport an hour before the interview. But yes, I have actually, I'm in the process of purchasing a European shark. And this is the plane that Zara flew around the world. It is the fastest ultralight. It's got a couple of Guinness World Records. Mm-hmm. So I like speed.
and Lee, do you feel comfortable?
What's that?
And Lee, does he feel comfortable flying? Flying with you?
He will. I'm going to give him some Benadryl and a little bit.
She's telling me that I got to at least learn how to land the plane.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Well, to support as a co-pilot. Yeah, almost.
We're a little isolated, like, you know, 3.5 hours away from Minneapolis, where both my kids live, and you know, she's got kids scattered, you know, hither and yon, and we also have a property up in Canada that's been in my family for, you know, 50 years or so. On Lake Superior. So this is going to give us a way to get there, you know, quickly. I mean, otherwise it's a 17-hour drive. So we're going to be able to put it to good use, but you know, Joyce is definitely living the value of, you know, the philosophy of aspirational aging, you know, getting her pilot's license in her 50s.
That's right.
So it's pretty exciting.
Never too late. How exciting that you're realizing your dream. Getting back to what you're passionate about, what you enjoy, you grew up with this. So, of course, this is wonderful that you're able to finally get your pilot's license.
Yeah.
It's great.
Thank you.
Is there anything else? Oh, let me ask you, are you going to any upcoming conferences? We'll be at the Lifestyle Medicine Conference next weekend. Not this coming weekend, but
next year.
Yeah, we're gonna pick some out next year. Yeah. We have been to a few in the past, but we're definitely gonna start going. I've done a number of things online, but next year we're gonna pick some out and go. Our life has been in a bit of tumult because of the fact that we've moved twice. I've started this new job, blah blah blah. But now we're getting kind of settled in, and it's time to start doing some of that. So.
I will tell you, Maya, we would love to hook up with you and your husband at some sort of future event. And I will say, we did, it was a vegan holiday cruise, and we had an opportunity to sit down with Chris Wark. You know, Chris beat cancer. Oh my Lord.
Yeah, it's an amazing story.
He is such a nice guy. I mean, just... We will be interviewing him at some point. He did promise that he would talk to us. But Chris beat cancer. Oh my God, his story is just so inspirational.
Just a synopsis of him. He had cancer, I believe in his 30s, colon cancer. It was like a stage 3C or something. So in other words, it had gone beyond just the colon. And, you know, he got the surgery and he was advised to have chemotherapy and stuff like that. And he kind of looked into it and said, this stuff doesn't necessarily work all that well. And sort of ended up learning about a plant-based diet, went on like a really, really, really nutritionally intensive plant-based diet. And then, and he's been fine for like 20 years or something.
Past that 5-year mark.
Yeah.
And he's, you know what, let's just, I assume we got to wrap up here, but if there's ever a message of hope, there are just too many anecdotal stories of people literally reversing disease, even things like, well, Lee just interviewed Dr. Goldner, your autoimmune disorders, lupus, multiple sclerosis, you know, your severe rheumatoid arthritis, cancer. It sounds too good to be true. But like Lee likes to say, where there's smoke, there's fire. There's so much hope. There's so much empowerment in changing up your diet. Your diet is the best medicine. It really, really is.
Yeah. It's not just a slogan. It's literally true.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not telling people not, you know, seek conventional medical care, but it's just your diet is of profound importance for your health. And
yeah, absolutely. I got into, Joyce, you were saying that you at one point got into this juicing craze. I got into juicing many, many years ago when I learned about the Gerson therapy. And it wasn't that, I was, you know, I didn't have any significant kind of ailment. Well, I did deal with hypothyroidism. That's another situation. But the whole thing is that if I believed in that before, which is amazing that I believed in juicing, but had not transitioned my entire diet to go whole food plant-based, now I get it. Like now a lot of things make sense. Please go ahead.
Sorry to cut you off there. Just a little anecdote on that. You know, since I read Dr. Goldner's book and, you know, and we have a garden this year and had tons of kale. So I've been on like a green smoothie kick and like, I really like them now, you know, like tons of kale and it's a little bit of fruit just to give just a little bit of sweetness. Well, it's interesting. I've had some plaque psoriasis on my elbow for like decades. And I hadn't, it never bothered me. I never really thought about it. And I was doing the green smoothie thing for a while and I realized it's gone, you know, which, you know, psoriasis is a form of autoimmunity. And by just adding in these green smoothies, that problem has just completely disappeared, which is amazing.
Absolutely. It's incredible. What is the best way that listeners can contact you? And I will make sure to put all the links in the show notes.
Yeah. Well, they can email us at info@criscoandco.com. And then our website, www.criscoandco.com. And they can find all the resources and links to our Instagram, which I am revamping. Most importantly, our YouTube channel. And of course, a link to our podcast as well. But we are going to be pushing out more content in 2024. There's certain aspects of the site that are kind of in limbo right now. I've just hired an administrative assistant who's helping me out very part-time. And once I do get my pilot's license, cross your fingers, early 2024, I'll get back at it because I do want to provide some test kitchen recipes. You know, I'm not the greatest cook, but I like to experiment and
I like her food. I like her food.
All right. Well, I have checked out your YouTube channel and I think it's great. All that you're doing, you do have a lot of projects going on, but that's exciting. You're in that process of creating and sometimes that can take a little while, right? Especially finding the right support, even with a podcast. Having a team that can support you. If not, you're doing all the work and that could create some burnout as well. But well, I appreciate both of you, Lee and Joyce. Thank you so much for joining me today and hope to meet you in person soon.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
For sure. This was so enjoyable. Thanks for having us, Maya.
Yeah, thanks.
You've been listening to the Healthy Lifestyle Solutions podcast with your host, Maya Acosta. If you've enjoyed this content, please share with one friend who can benefit. You can also leave us a 5-star review at ratethispodcast.com/HLS. This helps us to spread our message. As always, thank you for being a listener.